Welcome to 49. My name is Judd Devermont. I'm the director of the Africa program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. I was the National Intelligence Officer for Africa and worked at the National Security Council.
And I'm Nicole Ouellette. I'm Chief of Staff at the Open Society Foundation and, like Judd, have served at the National Security Council, as well as the U.S. State Department and Senate Foreign Relations.
This podcast has everything you need to know about U.S. policy towards sub-Saharan Africa. What happened in the past? What should the Biden administration do? Plus, we promise to deliver the goods in 15 minutes or less, one country at a time.
This episode is about Senegal, and we're joined by Ibrahima Adara, Acting Executive Director of the Open Society Initiative for West Africa, OSIWA, which is part of the Open Society Foundation's family. So, Judd, what's the story of U.S. policy towards Senegal?
The United States established a consulate in Dakar in 1940. It was responsible for all U.S. interests in French West Africa. U.S. consuls in other parts of French West Africa, such as in Abidjan, reported to Dakar, which in turn reported to the U.S. Embassy in Paris. The first U.S. ambassador to the newly independent country of Senegal said Dakar was one of the U.S. government's key listening posts during World War II, and the country's strategic value was, quote, very great. The United States judged that it was critical to have close ties with Senegalese President Leopold Senghor because of his influence across Africa and his reputation as a moderate compared to leaders in Ghana, Mali, and Guinea. In fact, President Kenny picked Philip Kaiser as the second U.S. ambassador to Senegal because Senghor's heroes were Leo Blum and other French socialists, and Kaiser was an expert on the topic. Senegal's importance in global affairs became quickly apparent. During the Cuban Missile Crisis, Senghor agreed to Kennedy's request to deny the Soviets the right to refuel or land their military planes in Dakar on their way to Havana. One of the U.S. strengths was its cultural diplomacy. Senghor, as the author of Negritude, was very connected with the arts and the African diaspora in the United States. In 1966, Senegal hosted the International Festival of Negro Arts, which was attended by Duke Ellington and Langston Hughes. Senghor was appreciative of the Kennedy, Johnson, and Carter administration's contributions to civil rights, but never shied away from expressing his disapproval of racism in America. The United States also valued Senegal's connections to the Arab world and its non-alignment movement status. As a pro-West, majority Muslim country, Senegal welcomed the Camp David Accords between Israel and Egypt and worked with U.S. officials to ensure Egypt was not ostracized in international Islamic bodies. With the U.S. encouragement, Senegal abstained on an anti-Israel resolution and challenged Cuba's bellicose statements towards the United States. In addition, Senegal's peacekeeping and security contributions have been critical to bilateral relations. Senegalese troops deployed to Zaire to help Mobutu beat back a rebel threat in the late 1970s, and the country spearheaded ECOWAS missions to Guinea-Bissau in the 1990s and to the Gambia in 2017 to oust dictator Yahya Jammeh. Senegal also sent troops to Cyprus and served in the international coalition led by the U.S. in the first Gulf War in the 1990s. Finally, Senegal's democracy, while not without its challenges, have made it a U.S. favorite. In 1981, Senghor made what was then a very rare and noble decision. He stepped down from power. His successor, two decades later, accepted defeat at the ballot box, and then the Senegalese voted out Senegal's third president, President Abdoulaye Wade, who was trying to have a third term in 2012. Senegal's leaders, for all of these reasons and more, have been some of the most consistent African visitors to the White House. They've been feted by every U.S. president, starting with JFK. Actually, Trump is the only exception to that rule. And the presidents, including Bush, Clinton, and Obama, have visited Senegal. Nicole, do you want to talk about a major U.S. success or policy failure?
Thanks, Judd, and I'm hoping you and Ibrahima will allow me to divert a little bit on this question and talk about something that I think is a U.S. policy question mark. I don't think we know yet if it's a success or policy failure. And that is the decision to go sort of all in on Macky Sall when he became president in 2012 after yet another peaceful transfer of power in Senegal that, as the U.S. government, we took as evidence of deepened and sustainable democracy in the country. And as a result, we decided in 2013 that when President Obama made his trip to Africa that year, that he would start in Senegal. That trip was intended to really spend time with countries that do have a democratic trajectory and where we wanted to boost relations in order to help maintain that. And in Senegal, we were pretty excited about the direction that Macky Sall and very vibrant civil society actors were taking the country. The trick there, of course, is, as we have discussed and will continue to discuss in this episode, is the pivot that many Senegalese are seeing Macky Sall make. So there's this real question about whether he is going to try and have a third term in 2024. He did win his second term. He's been accused of coming after his political opponent in order to, with charges of rape, to help disavow any chance of him being real competition for Sall. You know, it really does make me think about what the utility was of that trip. Now, I am very proud of that trip that President Obama took. He spent time with judicial leaders from across the continent talking about the importance of independent institutions and the rule of law, which we know is the thing that's going to be so critical to sustaining democracy in Senegal, no matter what happens in 2024. But, you know, it really was an intentional focus to do that. Will that make any difference? Does approval of other major democracies in the world matter to Macky Sall as he moves forward? How much is it a veneer of democracy versus it being real? And how do those institutions hold up against what may be coming? We can hope for the best. And there's, you know, there's lots of reasons to be optimistic still. Ibrahima, given all that, what should be the Biden administration's strategy towards Senegal now? How should it be the same or different from the approach that we took during the President Obama years?
Thanks, Nicole and Jed. In addition to what the U.S. is already focusing on with the government of Senegal, mainly rural development and food security, public health, peace and reconciliation in the southern region of the country, Casamance, and security training, which are all critical to advance shared objectives, it appeared that during this past decade, from many of the Senegalese perspective, U.S. has been much less vocal on political governance, anti-corruption, and human rights matters. So many observers and citizens expressing concern over current political trend, like recent civil protests in March and April 2021, corruption scandal over newly discovered oil and gas contracting, according to the Anti-Corruption Commission report, caution around COVID recovery fund management, attacks against media freedom, civic space, and minority rights. So the other major challenge that Senegal is facing is accelerating inclusive growth to create more opportunity for women and young people who are the majority of the population and addressing the climate change effect. As we speak now, major cities in Senegal, particularly the capital city of Dakar, are facing flooding and risk of food insecurity. In the context of the increasing insecurity in the Sahel, as you are mentioning, the U.S. can contribute better in more coordinated security cooperation in the region.
Thanks, Ibrahima. So, Judd, that was a lot of smart stuff. How do we make it happen?
It's so important for the interagency not to just categorize Senegal as a strong democracy or an important security partner, but to go deeper and to talk about some of the things that aren't working and to engage more broadly with the Senegalese, both elite class, but also civil society and public. So I would say, you know, clearly, we need to continue the security engagement. I didn't mention in the history section how important the Senegalese troops are within MINUSMA in Mali. They are the sort of the quick reaction force. So continue that engagement and Senegal's leadership in places like ECOWAS. And I think this is where Ibrahim and I are in full agreement that Senegal has a bunch of challenges with its democracy. And if Secretary Blinken travels to Senegal, or if President Biden meets with Macky Sall, I think there's going to be an instinct to just talk about Senegal's progression and not talk about the corruption issues that Ibrahima raised, not talk about some of the challenges with the recent protests, some of the questions about Macky Sall disqualifying his opponents, what his ultimate intention is. We can have a mature relationship with Senegal, and that means talking about these issues and driving home that corruption is corrosive to Senegal's reputation, and that Senegal has a proud tradition and has to hew to it as it goes into the future. And then finally, Macky Sall is going to be head of the African Union coming up next year. So there's a number of issues that we really should be working with the Senegalese on. Global issues, whether it's about Ethiopia or it's about Senegalese leadership around climate change. These are things that we should be really pushing, because a country's that we have such a deep and long relationship with, we should be talking about these global issues. We did it all the time with Senghor. We can do it with President Macky Sall. I should note that at the end of this year, there will be the Chinese Forum for Chinese African Cooperation, known as FOCAC, in Dakar. So this is a place that China is very interested in as well. But we have the US and Senegal, a really strong relationship, and we should be focusing on what works in our relationship as opposed to trying to maneuver or block China. I think we'll lose track of what's so important. So that would be some of my advice to the interagency. So let's pivot from there to a big idea. This is your opportunity to tell U.S. policymakers, you know, what is a way that we can really take this relationship to the next level? What's your, you know, blue skies idea about the future of U.S. policy towards Senegal?
As I'm thinking around this question, I found it difficult, but I can think of this Biden administration taking the lead to kind of resuscitate and scale up the next generation of Millennium Cooperation Challenge for Senegal, which will be articulated around three critical sectors, in my views. The first will be to enhance and build resilience of health system to face cyclical pandemic outbreak. As we know, the region, the country is facing this cyclical pandemic, and we are not prepared. And this will be through providing quality health infrastructure across the country, you know, and build capacity of pharmaceutical production as part of strategy to tackle future vaccine inequality or inequity, not only for Senegal, but for the rest of the continent. The second point that I see is to strengthen the education system by building educational and training infrastructure to permanently eliminate temporary shelters, exclusion, and inequalities. For me, I found unacceptable that after more than 60 years of independence, thousands of Senegalese children are learning in temporary shelters and or cannot go even to school for lack of shelter at all. The last point that I want to make is access to energy for all. We focus on renewable energy, particularly in rural area, and for SMEs, the SMIs, to accelerate inclusive growth that I talked about in my introduction, create economic opportunity and jobs, climate change, transitioning. So all this cannot be done without sound democratic advancement framework, transparency and accountability, and protection of human rights and respect of rule of law and constitution provision.
So, Ibrahima, many foreign leaders, including several U.S. presidents, have spent time at Gorée Island. That includes President Obama in that trip that I mentioned earlier. He was there with Michelle Obama and with both of his daughters. It was a very moving moment. There's some really beautiful pictures from that experience. I remember a staff, we backed way off in order to allow that moment to resonate. But I think it would be great if you can talk a little bit about why it is such an important and solemn site to visit.
Thanks, Nicole. First of all, Gorée tells part of the human tragedy and remind people visiting that the world should never go back again to such things. Secondly, this site tells something about sub-Saharan Africa, African, and what trauma it has gone through, being depleted of its human capital. It symbolizes the last point of transit from Africa to America with the door of no return. Last point that I want to make is this site tells part of the history of Black across the globe, especially in America. It is a living symbol of slavery, reconciliation, and hope. It is a unique platform from where any U.S. head of state can speak to the issue the world is confronted with, such as the rise of racism, xenophobia, and intolerance, and speak to the hurt of Africa and the diaspora. This can be part of healing process in all society where Black are discriminated against and excluded. It is both a place of pilgrimage and departure of African Renaissance.
Well, that's the show. Please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts and check out our analysis at csis.org/Africa. Thanks.